CNBC.com's John Carney joins us now for a Power Lunch exclusive with Nassim Taleb. He is, of course, the author of The Black Swan and Anti-Fragile. Likes to call himself the Ghost of Davos. We'll probe that a little bit later. Do you not like to call yourself that?
That was not myself. It was picked up somewhere.
Someone else likes to call you the Ghost of Davos. Exactly. But whatever. You're no fan of Davos.
There's a specter haunting Davos, and his name is Nassim Taleb.
And his name is Nassim. But let's get to that in just a minute. But first, I want to talk about the thesis of Anti-Fragile, which is not only that you need to be less vulnerable to risks, randomness, hiccups in the world, but you need to position yourself, your portfolio, so that you take advantage of that. Is that a fair characterization? If I got one thing right here today, is that a fair characterization?
That's perfect. You cannot use randomness and disorder and the variability and volatility as fuel. You won't make it in the long run.
So how do you do that in today's context as an investor?
Okay, I mean, as an investor, you have, first of all, to prevent yourself from having fragilities, right? Mm-hmm. Fragilities from being exposed to a lot of downside. You need to be in low debt, have a large segment of your portfolio immune from market movements, and whatever that is, okay, not cash, some inflation-hedged cash, and the remaining 20% or whatever you're willing to risk, a high number of diversified, extremely risky bets. You do a lot better. So you have overall a medium risk portfolio, but you'll do a lot better than someone who has 100% of his portfolio at medium risk.
In your portfolio, you say you want to talk, that you feel only comfortable, and I respect that, talking about the things that you actually own.
Exactly.
You got to have skin in the game.
Yes.
In your world, what are those highly risky bets?
Well, I mean, I put it in stocks. I don't want to say the names of companies. I own speculative stocks. I own a diversified number of them, mm-hmm, across things. I also own not well-known stocks, because you need to own a lot of these, because they'll be the stocks of tomorrow. And also I'm trying to get into venture capital, although there's too much paperwork, so I get headaches.
One of the things I know that we used to talk a lot about was that, you know, bets that would pay off gigantically, even though they were very unlikely to happen. Are you still doing
of course,
that kind
option. My career was made, I started in the crash of 87, and you know when you have geometric explosive payoffs, so I understand very well that you can do well from randomness. But overall, my point isn't so much at the investor level as it is at the economy level. When these guys in Davos try to, take the idea of creative resilience or dynamic resilience, whatever it is, they're still trying to have a world tomorrow that resembles the world of yesterday, whereas you have to be positioned to confront a future that doesn't look like the past at all.
I think they thought that they were ripping off your idea of anti-fragile with dynamic resilience, but when you're talking about resilience, you're automatically talking about keeping what was there stronger in the future instead of adapting.
Exactly. You have to break things. The whole point is you have to, the fragility of some parts of the system will contribute to the overall health of the system itself, and you need that. So you need to break eggs, and we need to break first is the banking system,
right?
Because we live under this dogma that we have to protect the banks. Look where the world we live in today. We had a crisis. Those who benefited 4 years later from it, 5 years later, are the bankers first. They're richer than when we started, and the super rich got richer from economic policies meant to save the banks that inflated asset prices. And the middle class is poorer.
Right. That's what I was going to say. A lot of people would say we had to do this because it ended up helping everybody. But you were talking about how it hasn't really helped everybody.
It did not help. The American middle class. The American middle class, after the medium income dropped. It did not. The point is, and they were afraid of breaking the banks. They wanted to go back to the world of yesterday, you see, and that's what was the cause. America didn't get here to what it is today, trying to replicate the world by trying to replicate the world of the 16th century England, So we didn't. So, and the Industrial Revolution in the UK didn't happen by people trying to replicate the past. So you need to be in an environment that accepts destruction willingly, something where you face a future that's different, and that's an environment that gains from disorder.
So let me take it out of the context of the big banks and whether they got rich, but then let's take it down to the the housing market, where yes. individual Americans stood in danger of losing their houses, and many did. But there was a tremendous effort, and it continues to this day, to keep people from foreclosing, to protect individuals from that. Would we have been better off if that had been allowed to be as fragile as it truly was?
There were alternative methods. The first thing is, in a good world, you don't fragilize people by loading them with debt to start with. But the second step, in a world where you have that problem, you don't solve it by dealing with debt. You turn debt into equity. The only good thing debt has is that there's a mechanism to turn into equity. So the banks could have gone to homeowners and negotiated with them, but the banks did not want to write off their portfolio because nominally they didn't want to take it on paper, and people were not paying. So we were, and for 4 or 5 years now, we've been in a situation, a frozen situation, where still banks have, you know, the portfolios in mark to market, and we have a government helping the banks. So this is not a recovery. This is not a solution to a problem we had. We have to set back the clock. 5 years ago, had we addressed the core of the problem, what is the problem? Too much debt, too much centralization, a system that cannot tolerate error. Antifragile is a system that recycles error for profit. Okay? Just like I'm saying, if you have a plane crash tomorrow, every plane ride will be safer. Okay? No? So that's how it should be. This is a good antifragile system. That's not what we had. We made mistakes, and the remedy is not addressing the cause of the mistake, and odds are the next mistake will be bigger. And now we have a huge monster, like a monkey on our back, deficit.
When people say that, like, bank bonds are rallying, they're doing very well recently, you'd say that that's not because we have a less fragile system, it's because we have...
Exactly. You're right. You're worried about why banks can borrow so cheaply. Banks borrow cheaply because you're lending them every April 15.
Right.
Okay, you're stopping them out. All right. So this is not a healthy system. We have to address the core of the problem. We have not.
All right. Nassim, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thought-provoking, as always.